Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
It's nearly 21 minutes past 10 o'clock this Monday morning. David Coleman, good morning.
Did they hear that last bit?
Yes. My six-year-old is a girl, says a text. By the way, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you, Ryan. I'm very good.
You didn't drive up this morning. You normally drive up from Killaloo.
I do normally drive up. No, I came up last night to say hello to my parents.
And how are they?
They're very good. Yeah, all in good form.
Were they glad to see you or were they otherwise engaged?
No, always glad to see me, Ryan. Delighted to see me. But actually, they're coming down anyway next weekend because my son is in his transition year drama.
What's the play?
It's a
homemade job.
It's specially written, yeah.
Wow.
And an ex-pupil of the school is a playwright. And so she produces a new drama every year for the transition years.
That's pretty tough gig to ask somebody to come up with that. And I've got the transition year as well this year, with my Gertl, my daughter. And listen, how much is your son, and is he enjoying it or not?
Loving it.
So is mine.
Absolutely loving it. Thriving.
Thriving is the word.
Thriving, yeah.
I think it's great. It must be the school, is it? Because some people give out about transition year, say it's a waste, but cheaper.
Yeah, I think the school have to be very engaged.
Proactive.
And they have to, you know, have a lot of stuff planned. But, I mean, we went to the transition year kind of information evening last year, towards the end of last year, and I was blown away
by how much they can do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they can go and do, like, help in old folks' homes, and they can help in the community as well as, you know, maybe a foreign trip if you're in a position to do that. And
actually, he's coming up to Dublin to do a week of work experience.
Do you know where he's going to be?
He's with a marketing company.
Oh, good, okay. Well, that's nice.
Yeah, so that'll be a bit of fun. And then he's going to work in a chocolate factory for his second.
Oh, come on.
I know.
That's nice. That's got to be nice. Or maybe you'll learn all the secrets.
Oh, no, I'd say, no. I'd say he just eats the bread juice.
Do they make biscuits in Dublin? Is there a biscuit factory?
I don't know. Well, now he's doing that locally. The chocolate making is local.
Oh, locally to
Tim Graney is our own wild Irish.
Your own Wonka. Good. There's a lovely fudge maker in Cork. Fudge by Mella, is it? Butter. Do you know that? Do you know? Because you know all those organic.
But they do. They do. I know our own wild chocolates do fudge as well. Amazing fudge.
Is it proper?
Guinness fudge. Yeah, it's proper.
Why do you put Guinness? What do people put stuff in? Fudge is just butter fudge, crumble fudge. Leave it. What is it, like sausages with Guinness and thyme?
I think I said I'd ask Trish sausage. To get you some proper fudge.
I think she did.
Yeah, and I never have obviously
failed. No, I think she delivered that.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, but I think what happened was you came up with generous armloads of it, but there was only one that I liked, which was grand, but it was delicious. Can we have more? Just tell her the normal stuff. Don't be giving us that other messing. Now, shall we get down to business now after all that talk of sweets and... I do love sweets though. Mm. My six-year-old girl is hysterically afraid of fire. No reason as to why she would be, as nothing has ever happened to her. One day she saw a hot air balloon in the sky and she nearly lost her mind. Recently, we were in Disneyland and she was the same on some of the rides. She's an extremely anxious child and can't cope with going on holidays. She gets wound up so much that sometimes she'd vomit. Mm. So... she's just an anxious kid.
That sounds like it's more than simply a phobia to do with the fire. I mean, that sounds like she's got a generalised anxiety. And I'd be interested to know, though, is she the only anxious person in the family? My guess is not.
Feed anxiety?
Oh, thoroughly feeds
really?
It. Absolutely. Yeah, no. It's like, but you know it yourself. You know, if you go into a room and everybody seems a bit on edge, you immediately become on edge. Because
if you're beside a nervous flyer.
What's going on here?
Yeah.
There must be something that we all should be a little bit nervous of, obviously, because everybody's, you know, and so you pick it up. And so again, you know, you go into an exam hall and I'm sure it's the same, you know, you got half the kids in there don't care and the other half are thoroughly anxious. And so everybody's anxiety is feeding everybody else. So it does happen. It happens absolutely within families too. So, but I suppose the key thing really is to see, I mean, it sounds like they do have certain times when she's more anxious than not, but she's only six, and so a huge amount of the effort needs to be put in by the parents to soothe that anxiety. So they need to do things that will help her to calm down and to be relaxed. Mm. So that includes not just simply reassuring her, but just doing all the kind of the calming sounds in terms of the tones of voice and all that kind of stuff, because it's really important. So you say, oh, I know it sounds like it'll be really scary, or oh, I think you don't really like going on holidays, but, and then you come in in with the reassurance or the rationalizations or the whatever, but it's really important just to do a lot of the soothing to bring her heart rate down physiologically, because again, like with all anxiety, you know, it's having an impact on her whole kind of adrenaline system. So her adrenaline is probably up at key moments, like that she sees the fire burning in the hot air balloon and, you know, assumes that the world is going to end. And so that spikes her heart rate with her adrenaline. And so she needs somebody there who can help her just to calm that down, bring it down, so that she realizes that she doesn't have to be afraid, that actually she can cope with these kinds of situations. And then you offer the reassurances and the how unlikely certain situations are to happen and all that kind of stuff.
My 3-year-old, nearly 4, daughter, she plays very roughly with my 5-month-old son. You know, the love baby, love baby. Quack baby. She adores him, but sometimes lies on him and puts her hand over his mouth, never meaning to hurt him, but she does, and I really can't trust her with him. I've tried sitting her down, explaining to her that she needs to be gentle, etc. I've also got a cross, I've been cross with her.
Yeah.
And put her in a timeout, your favourite thing. Oh. Naughty step. Nothing seems to work. She continues to play roughly. I also have a 7-year-old son who's very good with him and at her age was very gentle with her when she was a baby. Any advice? End of tether mum in tip.
Yes, end of tether mum. Don't be fooled. The lying on the baby, squashing the baby, you know, expelling all the baby's hair, putting the hand over the baby's mouth is not necessarily just with no intention to do harm, because, you know, she has her nose rightly put out of joint by the arrival of this baby, I would imagine. And so if what she's trying to do is show you that she's really frustrated with the baby. And so, of course, you know, you're not going to get rid of the baby. So she tries to get rid of the baby herself. And I mean, you know, it's not like she's out there intentionally planning to kill and maim and murder the baby, but at the same time, instinctively she knows, look, you know, this baby is the cause of some of my strife here, because I'm not getting what I used to get because this little baby is here. Yeah. So I do think it's just a little bit of jealousy that's going on. And so key things are, you know, because of her age, so much of it is about vigilance. You just actually genuinely can't take your eyes off her when she's with the baby on her own, because it is quite likely that she's going to poke, prod, put her hand over the baby's mouth, whatever it is. And that's unfortunately what children will do. And so we just have to be vigilant. And then we have to do the training, if you like, about the coaching about how to deal nicely with your little sibling. And also to make sure that the 2-year-old or three, is she 2 coming on to 3, wasn't it?
3 going on 4.
Three going on 4. Talk
or 4 going on 5, sorry.
So she's got better language is the key bit. So in terms of certainly understanding you and even being able to, you know, maybe express a little bit better as well. But talk to her about how hard it is being an older sister now, that it was always lovely when she was just the little sister, but how hard it is to be the older sister, and talk about, you know, the space she's had to make and how she doesn't get certain things that she used to get, and then create a little bit of special time for her so that she does realise that actually she's not been abandoned, that she's not been displaced.
It's all about the reassurance this morning, David.
Well,
I say you're doing very, very well. Good man.
Thanks very much.
Is that reassuring?
No, that's just patronizing.
No, I'm trying to reassure you. Like, you're telling everyone else to reassure. You're patronizing everyone else. I'm patronizing you back.
No. What you should say
I have your
what
back
you should
here.
Say is, it sounds like you're doing a great job there, David. You know, it's hard, isn't it, sometimes this radio presenting? And I go, you know, Ryan, it is hard. Yeah, but actually, you make it look easy.
Oh, okay. That's why you're the expert.
Yeah, and you're the radio presenter.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. Carol, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ryan.
How are you today, Carol? You all right?
I'm not too bad.
Okay, now you're back in work after maternity leave.
I am.
And how's it all going?
Work is fine. I'm actually quite happy to be back at work.
Yeah.
But I have 2 children, so a 3-year-old and an 11-month-old, so they're in creche for the first time.
Yeah.
And the 3-year-old has just is losing the will to live. She does not like this at all.
The new world order is not working out for her at all.
No, okay. She's not a happy girl. So I'm only doing 3 full days to start with, just to ease her in. Well, ease them in, that was the plan. But even she has just basically turned from a lovely, happy, bubbly 3-year-old singing and dancing all of the time, happy child, to crying and whinging and clingy, even on my days off.
Yeah. Carol, hi, David here.
Hi.
You know, she is just, it sounds like, traumatized by the whole separation from you, that it's actually just come as such a shock to her whole system. And she just is taking a long time to settle into, as Ryan described, the new world order, you know, and it is hard. You know, we have to remember that because, you know, she's probably been used to you being around, certainly throughout the pregnancy, I'm guessing, and the first 11 months by the sounds of it. And so that's, of course, just been lovely for her, you know, and so she can just rely upon you to be there. She can enjoy the time with you. And now suddenly it's all change. And so she's just missing you. It sounds like missing you dreadfully, which is where the clinginess is coming in. But also the bad humor, because, you know, in some ways, I suppose, because she's so shocked herself, it's like she's trying to explain that to the world now. And being only three, you know, there's a limit to how articulately she's going to be able to say, you know, ma'am, it's actually really hard being in that crush. I mean, the people are nice, you know, they are nice, but actually, there's all these other kids. I just don't have quite the same attention paid to me. And it's not like anybody's really looking out for me like you used to look out for me, you know. So that's possibly her experience in the crèche, you know, no matter how good they are, they're just not, they're never going to match up to you. So it's about just being really patient with her and being really understanding, you know, talking with her a lot, even if you feel she may not necessarily say stuff back to you. But do talk to her about what it might be like for her in the crèche and how hard it might be to be separated from you, how hard it might be to have to make space for all these other kids.
I wonder, is she, Carol, your daughter, is she having fun all day in the crèche and just getting on with it and then reserving the kind of the sulk and the sadness for you at home, or is it consistent throughout the day?
It's consistent throughout the day. Okay. So the crèche actually rang me. Now, she had a few days off because she had a vomiting bug, so that didn't help. But before that, they actually rang me one of the days that she went in fine without crying, so I thought it was going to be a good day, and they rang me at about 1 o'clock in the day to say she wouldn't eat or drink or go to the toilet for them.
Okay. So it just, you know, it's like I say, it sounds like she's actually been traumatized a bit by the whole experience of going in. Now, you know, that's not necessarily a reason to whip her out. And obviously, you know, needs must. You obviously need to be back at work. And that's important for you as well. So it's not about, you know, pulling the plug on all of that and suddenly rushing in to save her and bring her home. But it is definitely about talking with the crèche to see, is there any single person on their staff team, perhaps, who could take a special interest in her? Now, I know that's sometimes hard for crèches because you know, they have, depending on the numbers there, but that somebody, you know, ideally a kind of a real motherly figure within the staff group who might just take her under her wing and might just kind of, you know, allow her to kind of come with her around, particularly if she's going even to some of the other rooms. Now, again, I know different crèches have it very, you know, strictly segregated in terms of, you know, children in different rooms and stuff, but it would be great perhaps if she had a sense that there was somebody just looking out for her who could also be just a bit attuned as well to that emotional stress of being in the crèche.
She did attach herself to one of the girls and actually has fallen asleep on her knee a couple of times crying. But what was happening one of the days, one of her bad days, is when that girl left the room, she also lost her life.
Yeah.
So what we've decided to do now is, it is a very long day for them, so my parents are collecting her early.
Okay.
Maybe that
she's
could be
delighted with that.
That could be a nice transition.
I'm afraid nearly she'll get too happy with that, and then when it changes again, I don't know.
Well, you know, sometimes these things, you know, in terms of any kind of big significant change, you know, like a transition that's gradual as opposed to a, you know, a total, you know, kind of 180 degree shift. So, you know, if it is the case that she can even have, you know, maybe 6 weeks or 2 months of this kind of shorter day in the crèche and a bit of time with her grandparents, then they could kind of wean her back on to, so that the grandparents, you know, your parents might be able to pick her up, you know, maybe 2 hours early as opposed to a full half day early, and then 1 hour early, and then she's there for the full day and you're picking her up. So, you know, it might be just about kind of easing her in into it in that way, because it does sound like it's just hard. But she will, you know, children are remarkably resilient, and as long as we're patient, understanding, warm, they do get used to pretty much any situation.
Well, can I just say one thing as well? One other thing, sorry. As well as the daytime crying, I know she has never been a good sleeper, but she, in the last couple of weeks, has started waking up screaming and is inconsolable at night. I get into the bed beside her. Sometimes she seems to be still asleep, so it seems to be a nightmare. Sometimes she's awake and she's just won't stop crying and screaming.
Yeah.
She'll go to sleep and then she'll wake up a few hours later with a little scream again. When she wakes up fully, she's fine. When it is actually morning time. But this crying and screaming at night time as well is...
Yeah. Carol, you know, I know I said it's not about necessarily rushing in to save her, but actually, you know, you do need to pay heed to the fact that she's this upset and this distressed by the change.
It's pretty full on, isn't it?
And it might be worth really questioning, you know, is the cost of you know, you being in work worth the benefit of you being in work at this stage? You know, the cost to her, but also to you, because you're not getting rest at night. You know, you're all distressed in the evenings because she's in such bad form. And so it might even be worth, I mean, I don't know what your employment situation is and whether it's even possible for you to look at something like half days either, if there's any kind of flexibility or if you can afford to do that. But actually, you know, it might be worth really paying heed to just how distressed she is, because it does sound like it's above and beyond, you know, typical separation anxiety. You know, something is very significantly stressful about this situation for her.
Okay.
Sorry now, Carol. Not what you wanted to hear, perhaps, but I do think you really need to pay
heed. That's kind of the nuclear option, though, isn't it? Leaving the Carol goes to her job 3 days a week, and now you're suggesting that she has to stay at home and kind of concede defeat to a child who just can't cope with the new reality.
Well, and it is 3 days.
It's already part time.
Has to be taken time off to.
So are you being a bit defeatist here, David?
No, but I mean, you know, Carol, I suppose if it's 3 days and so that's part-time working, you know, is there flexibility to do those, you know, three days, stretch them over five half-days? Just the day is shorter for her, because I guess...
Why don't you answer that? Can you do that, Carol?
No.
No, so that's that option gone.
Okay. Well, then it's just, you know, really, I suppose it is, though, about just acknowledging just how distressed your daughter is. And that's what you really need to try and keep talking with her about, just how difficult this is for her, what a big change it's been, how hard it is. But then, you know, how actually some bits of the day are nice, how some bits of the day get easier, and how the whole thing in time will become more settled for. And it will, as long as, you know, you remain kind of positive and upbeat. And the creche staff, it's really important that they're, you know, alert to and able to mind that level of distress as well.
Could the crash be?
I have to say they have been really, really good so far.
Oh, great.
They've been really, and I'm really happy with them. And they are a lovely bunch of people.
That's good.
And they are very caring. So
that's not an issue.
That's
anyway.
What you need. Yeah, yeah, that's what you need.
Well, look, keep soldiering on, Carol. I think what we'll do is we'll come back to you in a month.
Okay.
In the second time we see David now, rather than the next time, and we'll ring you and see how Carol is getting on with the Klingon, and we'll see how you're doing, and with any luck we'll be a little less Kling and a little more happy and peace in the valley. Okay,
that's great. Yep.
Go and fix the problem, Carol.
Good luck. Okay. Carol,
bye for now.
Thanks very much. Thank
there you
you
go. That was a heartless kind of conclusion to that piece with Carol on the phone. That is a tough gig now.
Oh, very difficult.
Really,
you know,
tough.
Because, you know, you're so caught between a rock and a hard place as a parent, you know. You know, it's very clear from the way Carol was speaking, you know, she can't not be there for the three long days. And, you know, and yet it must be really upsetting for her to look at her daughter so distressed as well.
Text, why do 16-year-old boys grunt instead of talk? My gorgeous boy has turned into a slob, battling with us over the slightest thing. We agreed to give him a bit of freedom this year for transition year, but enough never seems to be enough, so we have to clamp down again, and it's exhausting. I'm afraid it's rubbing off on my 11-year-old daughter, and she is trying to be smart and to keep up. Help. God, I passed by a bunch of 16. I mean, of all the things, just sorry, this is a complete aside, but being well-known, if you want to call it that, it kind of sounds a bit up. But look, it just has its advantages and disadvantages. And one of the great disadvantages is teenage boys. No issue with girls, no problem at all. But teenage boys, because they're like, you know, they're trying to give each other dead arms and they're shouting words and their voice is half-breaking. Tuberty! You know, and I met a bunch of them recently and I just thought, God, I'm so glad I'm not that age. I never want to be that age again.
Yeah.
They hit 18, they're fine. And in fact, 14, 13, they're fine. But that 15 and 16, they're just, poor God help them. They're like baboons who fell off the tree. What do you got for me? What do you got?
You want me to say something more beyond that?
Yes.
Have you just described for this mother?
Well, she
needs a temporary
help.
Thing. Give it time, you know, eventually he'll
it's
climb
a temporary
up,
little arrangement, like Zafina Fall in the PD.
He'll climb back up the tree and be like a normal human baboon.
That's all it is, isn't it?
No,
he will evolve.
He will evolve.
This is all Darwin, lads.
You know, but I do think as well, there is something, I mean, if that is a mom who's texted in as opposed to a dad, you know, there's something
I think
about
it was a mom,
that. Yeah, I think there's something about that kind of mum and 16-year-old son relationship as well. I think that's that's kind of difficult because, you know, the teenage son is really trying to push in terms of independence, in terms of creating his own identity, all that kind of stuff. And so when it's a mum, particularly, who has to kind of put the brakes on and say, actually, no, there are still limits and all that kind of stuff, I think it causes even more conflict. And sometimes actually it's good when that can be a shared role, that it doesn't just fall to one parent or the other, that actually both parents, you know, put up a joint force to say, actually, look, certain things are not okay. And if you want any kind of privileges, then you've got to, you know, engage with the family. So if you actually need the lift to wherever, you know, you do your bit. If you need the cash for whatever, then you do your bit. And so you do a little bit of barter.
Okay, very good. We'll take one last question, and this comes from Patricia. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you. And David here to answer your call about your six-year-old son.
That's right, yes.
Okay, talk to us.
Well, he's just quite shy. He's gentle nature. And I'm just wondering, is there any tips or anything I could do to encourage him to be more confident with the other children in the class? Just to approach them, to play with them more, just to join in a bit more.
So what happens at break times and things like that?
Well, he does have a little circle of friends to play with at break time, so he's not completely on his own.
That's good.
But it's just really mixing. He tends to stick to the ones he knows and likes, so I'd like him to maybe mix a bit more and be confident. You know, if the one he plays with isn't in, for instance, I wouldn't like him to feel lost, but he'd have somebody else to play with.
Do you have any other kids, Patricia?
I have one other son, yeah.
Older or younger?
4-year-old.
Four.
He's four.
Okay. Now, David.
So were you comfortable, just before we get to your own issue there, were you comfortable to know what your son will be like in 10 years?
As a teenager?
Oh, yes, a baboon.
A baboon.
Falling from the tree.
He'll be fine climbing up the tree, and he'll be grand sitting on the branch when he's 12 and 13 and 14, but when he's 15 and he falls off and you hear the thud and he scrapes his knuckles as he comes towards you with his breaking voice, then you're in trouble. Until then, you're fine. So back to our shy little 6-year-old.
I think so, yeah.
Sorry, David.
See, Patricia's there thinking, there's no way my son's going to...
No.
He's too gentle of nature.
He's too shy. No, he'll just be nice. A shy baboon. Anyway, go on.
But anyway, Patricia, the key thing is sometimes that actually arrange to have some of the lads from the class over on a one-to-one play. So of the group that he's kind of friendly with, C, so he might have one particular friend who he's particularly close with, and then C, in terms of that kind of extended group of acquaintances, that you might develop some of the friendships by having those kids over. And then you can actually support him if you're, you know, be around and about when the friend is over. So if you notice that your son, for example, you know, picks up a book at some point and to read and leaves the friend kind of playing on his own, that you get involved and say, oh, you know, lads, are you stuck for something to do? Let me help you plan something to do, so that you might get involved and get them active together, get them busy together. So a lot of the time it's about you actually kind of coaching your son, giving him bits of advice about, you know, making eye contact with friends, looking them straight in the eye, you know, having things about his life that he might want to tell people, and also finding out stuff about their lives. I mean, that's what ultimately builds friendships, is a sense of, you know, connection in some way with other people. And so that's what children need to learn as well, in terms of their own friendships, mm-hmm. that they need to find, you know, kind of, I suppose, like-minded children who are interested in the same kinds of things. And sometimes, you know, that's a natural process of you check out with a large group of people and you find two or three who actually you do connect with. And so, you know, he's probably doing that quite naturally, and you know, and the assertiveness, I suppose, and the confidence to feel like you can just go up and chat to people comes from knowing how to do it, I think, sometimes, that you feel you actually have the skills. So teach him the skills of good conversation, teach him the skills of sharing, turn-taking, you know, and then invite some of these friends over on a one-to-one. Don't invite, you know, groups of three where there's three lads there, because, you know, one can get left out. But if it's one-to-one, then, you know, he stands the best chance of expanding or deepening that friendship, and that'll stand to him then when he goes back into school, hopefully.
That's great.
That's not bad, Patricia.
Thanks very much for that.
All right, Patricia, we'll good
talk
luck
to
with
you.
This.
We'll keep an eye on him. We'll talk to you in about 9 years' time and see how he's getting on.
Great.
Have a great day.
Thanks very much.
You're very welcome. David, thanks so much for that. We have to say goodbye now at 16 minutes to 11 o'clock in the morning, but I enjoyed that.
All good things come to an end.
Well, and so does this item. So thanks very much indeed, David.
Harsh.